Saturday Night Live with J.K. Simmons is over and has been for a couple days now, but we're just getting started here on Saturday Night Live, live here on Post Show Recaps. And now, here are the two guys who were semifinalists for Mr. Trash California. I'm Rob Sestrino. Here's Rich Tackenberg. Rich, how's it going?
Good, good. Better late than never. Still very excited to talk about SNL.
Yes, we apologize that we were having some technical difficulties tonight getting the show started. Rich had to activate Pushy on his laptop, and then Pushy was able to make everything work right, right?
It would have been quicker if I murdered Pushy. I'm sorry, guys. I just couldn't do it. I came close.
Yes. All right, Rich. So we are getting ready here to talk about J.K. Simmons, your boy.
My man. Now, before we get into this, to ask the question, have you seen Whiplash or not? Because that'll determine a lot of tonight's excitement level.
No, well, Rich, not only have I not seen any films nominated for an Oscar for 2014, I only recently saw American Hustle.
Oh, okay.
But it was so good. It was good. Yeah.
Oh, good, good. Thumbs up. That's good. Good.
Yes.
Well, yeah. No spoilers, but I would say having seen Whiplash, I was very excited for J.K. Simmons. So going into it with a lot of expectations that this was going to be a good show.
Yeah, I actually listened to him on Howard Stern last week also, and Howard Stern said it was one of the best movies of all time, Whiplash.
That would be a little bit of an exaggeration. I know it's surprising to know that Howard Stern might have exaggerated, but it was my favorite movie of the year.
It was very funny. Howard Stern was very anti-Birdman.
Oh, well, a lot of people are. A lot of people are very anti-Birdman. People either love it or hate it. Except for me, I liked it. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. My wife loved it, but many people we know did not like it at all.
All right. So a lot to talk about here tonight on our SNL recap. We're recording this on a Tuesday night because after all of the hoopla with the Super Bowl, and we'll talk about some Super Bowl sketches from this episode. So that was Sunday. And then last night I got involved in a crazy night of Celebrity Apprentice. PhoneGate, Rich. Vivica A. Uh-oh. Fox's phone went missing.
Oh my God, that nothing could sound less interesting to me, but maybe that's why I'm post-show repacks and not Rob has a podcast.
Yes, well, boy, it was a crazy night. And so we'll talk about none of that here tonight because it's time to talk about SNL. And so we are live here on Tuesday night. We got the chat room going. Thanks to you guys who followed the show to a special time. Also, Scott St. Pierre's following your tweets, hashtag PS Recaps, and also on our YouTube channel at postshowrecaps.com/YouTube. And Rich, if I didn't mention it last week on the show, the new Rob Has a Podcast app is now available for Android.
Ooh.
Yes.
Nice.
So never miss any of your Rob Has a Podcast or Post Show Recaps or reality TV wrap ups when you get the Rob Has a Podcast app. You can either go to robhasawebsite.com/app or for the new Android version, robhasawebsite.com/Android. Pushy, I hear, favors the Android version.
True. Well, do you not yet have something for Microsoft Windows Phone? When is that app coming
out? Wait, that needs a separate thing?
Yes, that's a separate app.
Well, we don't have a Windows Phone app. Nobody's asked for that, so I didn't think we needed that.
All right, okay. It'll come eventually.
All right, Rich. So here we go. J.K. Simmons, as we are less than 2 weeks away from the SNL 40th anniversary. Some news this week also, Rich, that Eddie Murphy will appear.
Yes, the list was officially, I have the official list was released this morning of the attendees. A lot of famous returnees, a lot of people that I like, but I don't have any interest in seeing them on an SNL reunion. We'll talk about that at the end.
Okay, good. A little bit of a reunion preview coming up. And of course, we'll have a podcast for you guys about the reunion as well coming up in about 2 weeks. So let's get into it. Our first sketch was Richard Sherman's Super Bowl talk.
So not a huge Seahawks fan, as is a surprise to all of our listeners, not a huge sports fan. So I only barely knew who Richard Sherman was. I could not have told you who Marshawn Lynch was. So I went into this with the okay. And I had a couple of comments on this, but I will say, as not a sports fan, I was a little bored till Taron Killam showed up. But I'll defer to you as the sports fan. Oh,
Yes. Sorry. My wife does not have the podcast schedule, Rich.
Yeah, well, I get that. As a sports fan, what did you think of the cold open? You may be able to speak to the Richard Sherman impression and the whole Marshawn Lynch thing better than I.
I thought it was fun. I mean, I would much rather have seen it this week. I think that there would be many more opportunities for hilarity to talk to Pete Carroll on the Richard Sherman show on Monday as opposed to on Saturday after the call from the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. The thing I would say, what was interesting for me about the sketch, because I'm not a big football fan, was watching the different the impressions. And I don't know how good Jay Farrow was. I can't imagine Kenan Thompson was good at all. And I can't tell you how good Taron Killam was, but I realized something we don't talk about enough on this show, which is that I feel like the difference between a good impression on SNL and a really good impression on SNL is that a really good impression creates a character so fun that even if the viewer doesn't know the person being impersonated, it's still fun to watch. And Taron Killam did a great job of that as Pete Carroll, because I did not know Pete Carroll from the hole in the wall, but I found this character hilarious. And I really, you could bring back Pete Carroll in 2 weeks and I would be happy. And I don't know anything about Pete Carroll.
So I think we might bring back Pete Carroll in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would like, I think, and that was such a good character. I'd have him bring on Weekend Update, have him sort of defend the call and all that good stuff. So a big shout out to Taron as a great job of creating a character that was sort of lovable by all, I think.
What'd you think about Richard Sherman going after Bill de Blasio?
You know, I would say it would have been very funny, except, you know, again, this is where SNL gets into trouble. We're doing current events, you know, 5 days later. You know, the joke about the blizzard was already made by Jon Stewart, not only on his show, but then in a very reposted, you know, viral video about, you know, him making fun of the coverage of the blizzard. He made a joke about, you know, the Dairy Queen blizzard. So it was SNL a little late to the party with a big joke. So it didn't work for me.
Okay. All right. Let's get into J.K. Simmons here in the monologue, Rich. And I'm sure as a Whiplash guy, you must have loved this.
Saw it coming down 6th Avenue, making the turn at 49th, getting in the elevator. But you know what? And you knew it was coming because he, you know, as he's explaining, I was in this movie called Whiplash. He explained the movie, and as my wife and I were talking before the show started, I was like, if he explains the movie in the monologue, then we're going to see a Whiplash parody at some point in the evening, because the box office for Whiplash is less than, you know, forget it. I mean, it's such a small movie. No one in the audience, you know, statistically speaking, has seen this movie. So he had to set it up for everybody so that we could do it. And then, you know, and that was, as you can probably guess, one of the pivotal scenes in the movie is the whole, are you rushing or are you dragging? And then, you know, not my time. That was a very, very great scene in the movie. Really kind of really brutal scene and really, really fun. So we're going to do it here. We're going to do it with, you know, with the SNL cast members. And I thought, given you knew exactly where it was going to go, it was quick. It was easy. It was fun. Couple of really funny lines. I liked it.
Yeah. Which of the SNL cast members getting yelled at did you enjoy the most?
That's a good question. I mean, I thought Kyle Mooney was probably the best because you had Kyle did a good job. And although JK stumbled a little bit on what was a great line, like, oh, this is not one of your little videos. Little weird videos. Yeah. I thought that was really fun. Again, Leslie Jones, I'm going to keep saying it till Lorne Michaels downloads the podcast. We get into this trap now because of what we talked about last week on the Kevin Hart episode or the Blake Shelton. And before that on Kevin Hart, Leslie Jones comes out and we know the character Leslie Jones is going to play. The minute we see her, we know she's going to scream at Blake Shelton. And then sure enough, she does. Was it funny? Yeah, it was funny. But it was completely predictable because we know the character of Leslie Jones, similar to the character that Pete has been playing of the stoner guy. So we get a couple of jokes that were kind of right down the middle of what we sort of expected. So I like that. Although to me, the funniest line is when he yells at Adi Bryant. She's like, I really miss Blake Shelton. I thought that was That was probably my favorite line of the whole thing.
Yeah, that was fun. Leslie Jones is 47.
I don't know. I could be sure.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That took me by surprise.
Yeah, I was also like, really? Let's see if we can find out. Yep, according to Wikipedia, she is 47.
Yeah. If you would have asked me, I would have said, but is she 30? So good on Leslie Jones.
I would have said 37. I would have shaved a sweet decade off of that. So good for her. Yeah,
good for her. Looking good,
yeah.
Rich, what do you think about the rumored Ghostbusters cast?
You know, if you're going to do Ghostbusters, that's a good cast. I mean, you know, I think it's really solid. I don't know about it, period. I don't know that I like the idea of it, but if you're going to do it, I'll take it. I think that's a solid cast.
What did you think about the Fred Armisen appearance in the monologue?
You know, it felt like just the, like, they were so desperate for a way out of this. So I was, you know, what are you going to do? How do you get out of this sketch? You can't kind of continue doing the movie because A, it's not funny, and B, people don't know it. So, all right, Fred Armisen, famous drummer, great drummer, comes down, does a little drumming for us. At least it kept the energy very high. So I liked, you know, instead of kind of a clunker joke, we just ended with, okay, now we're drumming, woo! And it was fun, it was good energy, and then we get out quickly. There's not like a big kind of, like, I'm glad after he drummed, we didn't have another three or four lines back and forth. It was just like, okay, we got a great show! D'Angelo is here, we'll be right back. So, kind of like, at least we get out with energy, which I'll take.
I did really like the line where he said to Fred Armisen, wow, Fred Armisen, you know who my favorite character was?
Yeah.
Stefan.
No, very there were good. Definitely a cute little cute lines in here. I like when they said something about hair and he said, I think all hair is ridiculous. I thought that was a cute little throw out. So definitely a, you know, I'd say, you know, was it lazy? Yes. Was it obligatory? Yes. Was it good? Yeah, I thought it was. As monologues go, when we have to have a very low barometer when we're judging monologues, this was one of the better ones of the season.
Rich, it's time to talk about, and I hope you're hungry, for some Totino's pizza rolls.
Oh, good stuff. We're doing our first pre-tape. You know, so here we're doing, you know, a great commercial for the Super Bowl, and we get to see the Totino's Super Bowl activity pack for women. So, you know, this is Vanessa Bayer just being so good. I mean, you know, this, you know, and for people who may not remember, basically she's, you know, she's cooking her pizza rolls, anything for my hungry guys who are watching the Super Bowl. And then she just goes back into the kitchen in a very sort of sexist way. You know, she's relegated to the kitchen, but have no fear. Tostino's also makes a super activity pack for her. And it's a word jumble. She's got to find the word hat, and she's doing a little coloring or a little connect the dots to make a B. So I really liked it. And this, I was thinking about this sketch a lot, even though it wasn't my favorite sketch of the night. Here's what I really liked about it. I think normally when you're writing a sketch like this, generally you're going to make one of two choices. You're either going to have Vanessa Bayer be the straight woman, meaning she's a normal, intelligent woman who's going to be very offended by the activity pack for women. And that's where the comedy is. Or she's going to be the crazy one in the sketch, and she's going to be completely into the activity pack for women and just a big fan of it and a proponent of it. The sketch was written, and Vanessa Bayer did such a great line that they did a very dangerous thing. They kind of crossed in and out of it. They clearly made her a over-stereotyped dumb woman where she's excited to find the word hat, and she's, you know, she's excited that when she realizes it was a B. But she's also very bored, and you can see that she actually was a little like, well, but I don't know what else I'm going to do. And so I thought this was such a great line that they walked it. It gave it almost even a little pathos to it, which made it kind of a fun sketch. And Vanessa Bayer was great about playing the dumb over stereotype, you know, woman that, you know, making fun of stereotypes of these commercials, and yet still having a nice little desperation to her that I thought was really good.
I felt like, and I thought it was very funny and I enjoyed it, but I felt like the ending I had a little bit of an issue with, where I felt like it should have ended somehow with sort of like a joke on the guys, where we sort of like, we're just left with it ending with, you know, that she sort of was dumb. Like, I felt like it should have ended up with some sort of a joke on how the guys were actually dumb.
It's a good point. I think it was hard because they had all along the way set up that you know, she's challenged by the word find of six letters, and she seemed to be really enjoying the activity pack. So it might have been hard to then do a reveal that she's the smart one and the guys are dumb. You're right. The ending was definitely kind of a like, oh, okay, how did this end? So I don't know how you solve that, but I probably maybe liked it a little more than you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get to our next sketch, which we're going to have a new ending to Casablanca.
Wasn't Miss Trash next?
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped ahead. Sorry. Miss Trash. Okay. Miss Trash 2015.
Oh, boy. if that could have been the song for Miss Trash 15, here she comes. Oh, boy. This was a tough. Oh, this was really tough for me. You know, I give it to, you know, J.K. Simmons. He's in it 100%. He's going to go for it. Wacky hairdo, singing along. You know, hard that they started with A.D. Bryant. And again, you know, here's the situation. I mean, you know, we're falling into with A.D. sometimes the same thing that I was talking about with Leslie Jones, where, you know, with this character that A.D. Bryant played, this is basically Tinkerbell from Delaware. I mean, we're really not doing anything different than Tinkerbell or little baby 80. I mean, we're really just kind of playing the same character here. So tough start for me. Cecily as Miss Trash California was a little bit funnier. Kate, Miss Trash from New York. You know, I liked that she was a graduate of doggy daycare. I thought that was very funny. But this didn't work for me. And Vanessa Bayer as the straight woman in the sketch, I thought, okay, well, that's the point. And then it kind of wasn't the point.
Yeah.
So this was really sort of all over the place for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I hear you also about 80, but I also think that Vanessa is also, I feel like we've seen this character, from Cecily. I feel like we've seen that character a bunch of times where I forget the name of the character that she's played in different sketches, but I feel like that's pretty much the character that she plays. That was like the girlfriend of the troll from a couple of weeks ago. It's, you know, the same.
Oh, Deirdre. Yeah, the Deirdre character. Yeah, you're right. I feel maybe it's because she doesn't do it as much, and there's variations between a little bit more between Deirdre or the girl you don't want to get stuck at with a party. But you're right. You're definitely right about that. I think for me, not as much as 80. 80 kind of has white trash, and then she has the sad mom character, and I hope she breaks out a little bit more than that. But you're right. This was a lot of stereotyping.
Yeah, and I also agree with you about the whole thing with Vanessa, because I thought that was going to be what the joke of the sketch was, that she was in the wrong place, but it just turned out to just be another thing they were throwing at the wall. And for me, it almost was like similar to the soap opera sketch that they did on the last live show,
yep,
where it was like Vanessa Bayer is like the one saying, oh, I'm not supposed to be here. You know, why is this stuff going on, where everybody else is accepting this sort of thing that's going on? And I don't know. Yeah, I agree. This was something that did not work, and I'm not sure why it was so early in the show.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that early. I will say I was happy, given the setup of the sketch. I did expect to see the last contestant to be Leslie Jones to yell and scream at J.K. Simmons yet again. So I was at least happy we didn't play that trope one more time. But I think this was probably the most forgettable sketch of the night.
I did like that Cecily was accepted into UTI.
Yes, that was very funny. That was very right. funny. And to be honest, as much as I liked that, what's your name? The Kate McKinnon character was kind of Justin Bieber with long hair and a dress. That's okay. I'll take it anyway.
We'll take it. All right. Let's talk about movie classics. Let's talk about the alternate ending to Casablanca.
Okay. So let's say this. This starts, we've seen cinema classics before. We've seen Keenan as Reese DeWitt before. This sketch, when we've got our little cold thing of Keenan explaining that we're going to see an alternate ending, and then we get into this whole thing about how he's a bad guesser and the birthday, I was just with my hands in my head going, oh boy, oh, this is going to go on forever. So I was at a zero, just at a low point of like, oh, coming off of Miss Trash 2015, what the F is this? And then we get to the actual alternate ending of Casablanca, and Genevieve and I laughed so hard at this sketch. I thought this was probably my favorite sketch of the night. Super simple idea, super simple premise, great writing. I saw on Twitter, written by James Anderson and Ken Sublett, two writers on the show. Kate McKinnon just killed it. And it just made me laugh just endlessly. Watched it a second time, still laughed hilariously.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I did not crack up as much as you did. I'm not a huge Casablanca guy. I mean, I've watched it once, so I'm not as familiar with the source material, I would imagine, as you are.
You know, I probably have only seen it once or twice. Probably you and I both saw it at a McKee seminar at some point or something. You know, I knew enough about it. I didn't know, basically it was basically the lines, but they had a very clear point. It's, I guess, in the real movie, Rick actually says, you know, hey, 9 times out of 10, you'll end up in a concentration camp. And in the Ingmar Bergman just sort of, you know, Ingrid Bergman just, you know, goes on as if that doesn't set. And in this one, she's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And just that turn, I just, everything about it from there on, I thought was really funny. And I'll say the premise, the conceit of this, Risto what tells us is that this alternate ending came about because the girlfriend's director said, hey, let's try one my way. Doesn't make any sense. There's no reason for this, but I just love the idea that when she hears, you know, you'll end up in a concentration camp, she's like, all right, I'm out of here. I just thought it was really fun. So to me, a huge, huge thumbs up.
Yeah, I really like when she refers to the concentration camp as a CC.
Yeah, I like when she said something about she's going to wave goodbye from one of the little windows on the plane. That just killed me. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, it was. I was enjoying it. I thought it was fun. I was smiling all through it, but I wasn't, you know, dying from it. But, you know, great job also by Kate McKinnon and J.K. Simmons also.
Very good, J.K. Simmons. And I will say this is not in the pantheon of the alternate ending to It's a Wonderful Life. With the, you know, one of the great Dana Carvey sketches that should be in the 40th anniversary. It's one of the great, if there's never been a better alternate ending sketch than that. But this, I just thought was real fun.
Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about our next pre-tape piece. It's the Teacher Snow Day.
Well, I wanted to like it. I liked a lot of pieces about it. I just wish that I liked it. This is what I'll say about it, and then I'll cede the floor to everyone else about this. I love a lot of people in this cast, and I think that we've got great diversity in type and gender, in age. But the one thing about this cast as a rule is we don't have anyone that actually does a good mean mother effer kind of character, that we don't have someone who can play and actually do edgy in this cast, you know. And you look back, it's hard not to compare this to, you know, like Lazy Sunday, where you had two of the whitest, nerdiest actors in the world, Andy Samberg and Chris Parnell, who, when they did rap, really sold themselves as hard edge. And Bobby Moynihan cannot pull it off. Kenan Thompson cannot pull it off. Sasheer Zamata cannot pull it off. So while I liked a lot of this, it needed to play as like hardcore kind of rap. And I don't think anyone in this cast, except maybe Jay Farrow, could get close enough to get that level of sort of anger and edge to then make this premise funny for me.
Yeah, that's, I wrote in my notes that I felt like it was very Lazy Sunday.
Yes, yes. It was a lot of that idea, and I thought you just didn't have the right cast for this. And I, you know, always hard to say, we've talked about before, I don't know that the music, I don't know that this was the kind of song that had enough of a hook that we would all be sort of humming this the next day. But, you know, other than that, I mean, clever idea, like a lot of it, J.K. Simmons, you know, doing a little, you know, no pants in it, you know, brought some energy to it. But probably not my jam. Yeah. Didn't really work for me.
He'll do nudity, J.K. Simmons.
Oh, yeah. He'll go there.
He'll go there. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like it also went on and on for a bit, too.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that they probably thought that they had a big hit on their hands. I wouldn't be surprised if they were surprised that nobody's really talking about it on Monday morning.
Okay. All right. So that is the teacher snow day. Again, you get the sense that the SNL writers were holed up for the blizzard, felt like they had a lot of stuff on their hands.
Right.
A lot of snow-related material this week, and it was a little bit underwhelming, much like the snowstorm itself. All right. Are you ready to talk about D'Angelo?
Let's bring it on.
All right.
I don't want to hold back the Beast of Keast to talk about his man D'Angelo.
All right. The Beast of Keast. That's right. Our musical correspondent, James Keast. James, tell us about Mr. D'Angelo.
I think D'Angelo came, especially for the first song, as a secret weapon to try and derail the entire show, because the first song, Really Love, was so sexy that I think anybody who was watching it with a romantic partner, that was it. They didn't see the rest of the episode. They didn't make it to Weekend Update. They were 2/3 of the way through the D'Angelo song, and they were no longer watching television.
Wow. Wow. I have it on DVR. I will watch it tonight.
You should watch it with Nicole. So
I will play it for her and see what happens and report back next week.
D'Angelo has mysterious powers. Even if he is dressed like he's misinterpreted the Wolf of Wall Street as a costume.
With all due respect, I'm going to put those powers to the test.
Do it. Report back.
Yes. All right. So what was your take on, besides being sexy, what about the first performance?
I thought, it's his new record is really terrific, and D'Angelo is known as a soulful lover man type of music maker. And so it was very much in the wheelhouse of what D'Angelo is known for. And I thought, you know, for people that didn't know that he put out his first record in 15 years, sort of as a surprise in December, and this is the first TV appearance he's made since that record came out, it was sort of a good, like, hey, D'Angelo's back kind of introduction. And then he saved the kind of hard hitting stuff for the second song.
Okay, tell us about number two.
So the second song was a song called Charade, and it's a pretty funky, you know, early Prince kind of number, but the real statement of it wasn't that it was a cool tune that he played. The real statement was his band, The Vanguard, were all wearing various T-shirts, the I Can't Breathe and Black Lives Matter interspersed throughout. It's quite a large band. D'Angelo himself was wearing a hoodie, which I think is no small coincidence in the context of this performance. And then there was a outline of a body on the stage as well. And I just thought the whole combination, and then they ended the performance with a Black Power sort of raised fist salute. I thought the whole combination of all of those factors was really, really powerful. And I know I noticed that it certainly a lot of people were making note of that, as you say, on the Monday morning quarterbacks. And I just thought it's a rare thing for an artist who's, you know, trying to promote a new record to come out with that kind of powerful statement. And, I certainly think it made quite an impression, and it sort of reminded me that Saturday Night Live is kind of uniquely positioned to have these kinds of moments that become real talking points musically. And they don't happen very often, but when they happen, they, I think, get a little bit more attention than something that, a typical, late night music performance might.
Rich, I know you were going to give D'Angelo a try this week. Did you fall under D'Angelo's spell?
Well, I liked it. Here is the problem, and with no fault of Mr. Angelo, D'Angelo, I got up at 6:30 Saturday morning. So by the time D'Angelo is sort of jamming out the slow grooves at 11:40, I was just like, I was starting to fall asleep, and it had nothing to do with his talent. I was just like, I need Jebediah Atkinson to keep me awake. So I need to go back and watch it again, not being so tired, because I could appreciate the quality, but I was kind of falling asleep just because it was a very mellow, mellow groove.
All right. Very mellow. Okay. James, who's going to be the next SNL musical act? Are we expecting a number of musical acts at the 40th anniversary?
Well, they've announced a variety of people, including Kanye West and Paul McCartney and some.
No, that's legacy. Jason Sudeikis, James. That's not Kanye West.
Oh, I'm sorry. I only went on the life story. I didn't realize. But I don't know what the plan is, if they're going to have some sort of a super jam or if there will be musical guests interspersed or, if they'll do a clip show, maybe show some classic Sinead O'Connor.
Probably.
I don't know.
All right. Well, we will look forward to it. Follow James on Twitter at Exclaim Editor. Okay.
Thanks very much, guys.
All right. Take care, James. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. There you go. All right. So, Rich, you needed some Jebediah Atkinson. So, why don't we get into Weekend Update?
Absolutely. So, overall, not much to say about. We'll talk about our two guest correspondents, obviously mostly Jebediah. But overall, I thought the jokes were pretty funny. I thought we had a good, just solid jokes, not the best of the season, but a couple of good laugh out loud jokes. So I don't know how the chemistry between our two weekend anchor updates. Boy, I'm all over the place. Our two anchors are. But overall, I thought it was, fun and funny getting us to the return of the one-dimensional female character from a male-driven comedy. It's Heather from Work. You know her. It's Heather from Work.
Sure.
Yeah. So second outing for this, I liked it the first time more. I love the writing of this. How do I say that? I just think this is such a fun, they keep mining everything. All these little nuances. So how they play the female characters relating to sports. I thought there was a lot of fun stuff here, a lot of funny stuff. And I think that Cecily Strong does a very good job, but I think if they don't alter the character to be a little bit more excited, then you probably can't do this again, because now we've seen Heather from Work. She's very monotone. She's always very quiet. She's always giving looks. And I think that has probably run out of steam. I don't think you could do this a third time. And I'm not a fan, and I've talked about this the last time we saw this character. The chemistry between Jost and Cecily was, I don't know what's going on. Does anybody understand this? And that has no legs whatsoever. There's no place to go with that. So I laughed. I more giggled at this. I think I laughed the first time. I giggled this time. I would suggest they not do it a third time unless they actually gave the character more range so Cecily could bring some range to it and actually involve Jost in the character instead of just sort of shutting it down and kind of doing a classic improv no to the whole scene.
Yeah, let's not see it again until September.
Yeah, I don't think we would. I don't think we'll see it again in season 40.
Okay. Rich, what about the return, the highly anticipated return? Where's Chris Berger of Jebediah Atkinson?
We've been talking about it forever. Finally back. I'm a little surprised we're seeing him here because I really thought we would see him at Oscar time. And we're probably in the scheme of things not that far in live shows from the Oscars. So I was surprised to see Jeb Atkinson. We've now seen him enough times that we get the drill. SNL has become Mad Libs. We even got the one joke that Jebediah has got to pretend that the audience was really offended by to then later on make a pre-scripted comment of, oh, I'm not going to make this joke since the audience, bitched on this last one. Very Mad Libby. Again, basically, this is just this is David Spade's Hollywood Minute, Time Machine, Hot Tub, it's really,
wow.
We're really just doing David Spade's Hollywood Minute through time here. There's really no difference, I always think it's fun. I think it's funny. And I think that what you have here is, again, Taryn being such a great performer that, when you're talking about Meghan Trainor, if you just read the line that he said, if I read it flat and go, he said, oh, she's all about that bass, all about that bass, no talent. It's not that clever. But when he did it as all about the bass, not the bass, no talent, it was very funny. I mean, that was really, so you've got a lot of jokes that really were based specifically on his performance doing really well.
Yeah, and I have a little bit of a sneak preview for those of you guys listening to the audio edition of the Saturday Night Live podcast. We actually got a phone call in from our own Jebediah Rahapkinson to talk about the upcoming cast of the 40th anniversary of SNL. So I will play that at the end of the show on the audio version. So stay tuned for that.
An exclusive.
Exclusive.
I like it.
Yeah. Yes. All right. And if you're watching the video, you can see that at postshowrecaps.com. All right. Are you ready to talk about Pushy?
Pushy. Oh, my man, Bobby. It's the Bobby Show. This is Bobby Moynihan at his best. I love it. Again, if people didn't make it this late in the show or if they don't remember, you know, what I love about SNL post update is, you know, this is a scene where two senior citizens at home, you know, one is J.K. Simmons playing an older gentleman trying to write a letter in Microsoft Word, and he gets help from Pushy, the Microsoft pushpin, which is embodied by Bobby Moynihan. And I just thought this was really fun. I don't think it was the funniest thing of the night, but I thought it was really fun. I mean, just everything about, you know, just Pushy trying to help. And again, it was Bobby's performance, you know, so I like when exchanging the name Phil for Goof Troop, Dear Goof Troop, Happy Goof Troop, I like make no sense. It was really funny when they were selecting the fonts and they were going through all the Comic Sans, Times New Roman, and just, you selected just boxes. I just killed us. I thought it was funny. So again, you know, great performance by Bobby. And then we get to a turn, which we'll talk about, which I thought really was the Bobby Moynihan piece of the night. Just really fun. So I thought this was a really fun sketch.
Your favorite font joke wasn't Helvetica Bonham Carter?
That was really funny. I laughed so hard at that. And my wife actually stopped and looked at me to go, really? You're laughing that hard at Helvetica Bonham Carter? I thought that was really funny. But I'm a font nerd, so they're really playing to me at that point.
Now, Rich, has there been an update to the Microsoft Word Office Assistant? I mean, it seems like this is a bit of a time capsule piece that has the Microsoft Word Office Assistant, hasn't that been gone for like 10 years?
You know, it's funny. I had the exact same situation where I was watching it going, I don't have Word 2013. I remember the paperclip was a very big deal in its ridiculousness. And I remember Bob before that. I don't know if they just invented the pushpin or if it actually is they've brought back the pushpin or, you know, the animated icon assistant since I downloaded Word last. So I certainly cannot speak to that.
Yeah. Let us know in the comments if there's been any sort of an update, but I don't believe that's been the case. I would have to think that you would have read that everywhere if that was the case.
And so you're saying you don't think that there was actually a menu item of murder pushy?
Murder pushy. Yeah, so talk about murdering pushy.
Oh, this was great. When he wants to disable it and the option is to murder pushy, and Bobby Moynihan starts showing pictures of his daughter and not even begging for his life, but sort of like, you know, accepting his fate that he's going to die. Such a great turn and such a great sort of subtle performance before then going back to volume 10 when his life is saved and he plays dopey pushy again. So I thought that was really funny.
Okay. Rich, it's time for a digital short from Mike O'Brien.
Mike O'Brien is back with the Jay-Z story. So I am not a huge fan of rap, so I don't know what was the comedy of this sketch, because it just seemed like an accurate portrayal of the rapper Jay-Z and his wife Beyonce. I didn't see any humor here. It just seemed like a straight up, just a recreation of the real story of Jay-Z.
Yeah, as far as I understand, that's pretty much exactly how it went.
I thought this was almost tied for me as my favorite sketch of the night, or bit of the night, I would say. I just liked, you know, it made no sense. I mean, there was no sort of comedic premise to this, just beyond we're going to do the Jay-Z story in the most white bread possible version. Originally, when it started, I thought it was going to be everybody was going to play it real except Mike O'Brien. And that's not at all what this was. But it was just so silly and fun. And to get Jason Sudeikis to show up for a Mike O'Brien picture, I thought, hey, that's not too shabby. And him as Kanye West was just really fun. So overall, I just thought it was I think Mike O'Brien's got a really great line in these digital shorts that he walks where this really could have broke badly a bunch of different times.
No, I really enjoyed this as well. I was really laughing all the way through it. What do you think about this as the return of Jason Sudeikis to Saturday Night Live?
It's so funny. I mean, it's really a great vote of confidence to Mike O'Brien, who is not even in the cast anymore, who is, you know, a writer who has this deal to do, you know, sort of digital pieces every once in a while. So just really sweet that he came back to support, you know, someone who is a very junior member of the writing staff and cast when he was there. So it was just a cool cameo. I liked it.
Yeah, very fun. What was your favorite line?
You know, I only saw it once, so I can't remember. I can't remember anything specific. Did you have any favorite lines?
I just like when I'm talking about it, like how he's really good at rap, and then the whole thing with Jay Farrow, when Jay Farrow's like giving him the real lyrics to Empire State of Mind, and he's like, no, why would you say that? Like, it's very funny.
Yeah.
So I thought this was really, really good. I enjoyed it. And then we have a career day.
It's time to, you know, some people are firefighters. Some people are Japanese messy boys. You know, was this the best sketch? No. Is this the kind of thing I want to see them doing at 12:55 a.m.? Yes. This is what was it great? It was just, it makes no sense. It's sort of not clear what even the impetus of this sketch was. I don't have any idea whether there really are Japanese messy boys or whether this entire thing was invented for the sketch. I have no idea. I just thought it was fun. J.K. Simmons' commitment was really fun. Everyone in it was good. It would have been funnier. I don't think Pete Davidson really committed to the embarrassed son as much as we needed. So I would say a little bit of a strike on Pete for his role in this, but overall, never going to see it again, never going to talk about it, never going to even remember it. But, you know, I'd rather see this than a Shallon, or some other school sketch that, you know, I really don't want to see. So it kept me on my toes. I didn't know where it was going. It wasn't super long. And I don't think it was supposed to be the last sketch of the night, but as the last sketch of the night, I call it a win, given where the bar is at 12:55 a.m.
Yeah, I saw some of the comments in the chat room. People said they really didn't like this, but I actually did like this sketch.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. I was like very like at the edge of my seat of seeing like, hey, where is it going? And I thought that J.K. Simmons really committed to it all the way through. You know, I like that, you know, the point that he said when he talks about like what the Japanese messy boy is and then talks about how now I know I said the word underpants. it was fun. I enjoyed it. I really feel like the post update stuff in this episode was pretty strong.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in general, yeah, I think that almost everything they did at post update was good. I mean, I thought overall that this was a good episode. I mean, I thought that, you know,
yeah.
Did I walk away going, that was the best thing ever? No, but I thought, you know, I actually thought we got a little bit slower start, you know, cold open. I didn't think it was great. Monologue was cute. You know, Miss Trash wasn't my favorite, but overall, I thought this was a solid episode. We had a weird, and I know Johnny was saying this via Twitter, so it wasn't just me, that, you know, again, we come out of Japanese Messy Boy. We do not go to the still card with the mellow keystrokes indicating the end of the show. Instead, we have the band playing Full Out. So I'm like, and I'm looking at the clock going, what possible sketch could they still do next? We come back for the good night. And I think in the amount of time that I have watched this show, that may have been the longest live good night segment. It kept going well after the credits ended. We got all the way to announcer Daryl Hammond and the IATSE logo. And then we had a long stretch, before actually calling it a night. So, clearly, again, they got caught in the whatever piece was going to go next was too long, but just by a little bit, and they had to vamp desperately.
Yeah. It was very nice. No moat, right?
No moat. No moat. A lot of positive, A lot of, I think J.K. Simmons seemed to be going around saying hello to everybody. A lot of good things. And, you know, and as per we've seen in almost every episode, this season, that Leslie Jones is the first person to go up to the guest host and give him a big hug and say some funny stuff. So she's really kind of owning that. She's really, she's making that her own.
Yeah, she's 47. She's confident in her skin. She's not messing around.
She made it, and she made it. She finally got there, and she's not turning back.
Okay. All right. So let's take some questions here from you guys. This is from The Racing Source. Here he is. Robin Rich, are you excited about February 15th?
Well, that's a whole conversation that I want to make this a long podcast. Of course I'm excited about February 15th. Here's the thing. I'll say this. I can sum this up in one sentence. It would be very hard to disappoint me with the 3-hour live show. And it would be even harder to amaze me at the live show. I kind of know what I'm going to get. I'm excited to get it. I don't think it's going to be anything beyond effectively a large clip show with a lot of, returning people introducing a lot of clips, which in itself is not hilarious. But of course, I'm so excited to be a part of it and for our community to be a part of it. But I don't think we're going to see anything specifically that we'll be talking about as a culture the next day.
Right. You are the Japanese messy boy. You are going into this situation knowing exactly what you're getting. You're going to be, fed a very extensive meal, and you pretty much know exactly there'll be no napkin. There will be, exactly what they're going to say at what time. And it's all just part of the process. And you're very happy because it's the TV equivalent of a $45,000 gig.
Exactly. And as I said on a couple of shows ago, when we talked about it, to me, the dream that will never happen is if they treated this like the Grammys and we just did live new sketches, mashing up classic SNL characters paired with other classic SNL characters. So if we had Nick the Lounge Singer singing with the Sweeney Sisters or something like
that, well, that would be
kind
tough.
Of stuff, that would be really fun. Or, we could do, there would just be a lot of fun stuff we could do that would just be really fun. And of course that's never going to happen. There's no chance that that's going to happen. So it is what it is. It'll be a live clip show. We'll all enjoy it. 3 hours with a 1-hour red carpet live special with the Today Show, folks. But I will say about this, I'm excited. I mean, the fact that Eddie Murphy is going to be there, super cool. The fact that Norm MacDonald is going to be there, by the way, very cool. He has obviously not done anything since he was fired from the show. So a lot of the people that are returning, I think, is fantastic. I would say, though, as much as I like Emma Stone and I like Robert De Niro and I like Jerry Seinfeld, I don't need them on an SNL reunion show. I mean, if we're going to have non-hosts, you bring Steve Martin, who will be there. You bring Alec Baldwin, who still will be there. You bring Justin Timberlake. You bring Buck Henry. You bring people who are effectively cast members. John Goodman should be back. Do I need to see Kerry Washington, who I think is excellent? No, I don't need to see Kerry Washington. So I understand we're doing that for ratings. I don't need to see Peyton Manning. Taylor Swift will be there.
Derek Jeter.
Oh, Taylor Swift again. Taylor Swift, I give a pass to because I saw Taylor Swift live. One of the two times I saw SNL sitting in the audience, Taylor Swift was one. So I give her a pass because she's got a special place in my heart for having seen her host the show live. But does she need to be there? No, of course not. So, interesting call. I understand it's done for ratings. I hope they do something than more than just basically set up clip packages. And if they do, I hope there's some interesting ways in which they do the clip packages that are montages that we wouldn't expect, like by period of time.
Okay. Maybe Garth and Kat could like sort of improv a song for each montage package.
Oh, Rob, why do you have to ruin SNL for me? Why do you have to? You've planted that seed now. The seed,
it's out there in the universe.
It's a little like a boy seed is just planted in the middle. It's like a little, it's not even an a boy yet. It's just an, it's just planted in the back of my head. Now I'm going to have to watch with one eye every time if I see a blonde wig coming, you know, in a commercial.
A Kristen wig.
Godbuster. Oh, it's just going to scare me to death. Oh. No, don't do that. Oh, you know, but I do hope we see some live comedy. That's my big hope, and I have no idea what they're planning. Everyone's very hush hush about it. I just hope we see some live comedy and not just people standing on the stage introducing clip packages.
Okay, we'll see. This is Bill Simmons. This is JK's brother, actually. One day we will look back and say Kate McKinnon had a better SNL career than Kristen Wiig. True or false?
Ooh, well, it depends what you're judging it by. I gotta say, pound for pound, I think I'm enjoying Kate McKinnon more than Kristen Wiig, because the Kate McKinnon characters that have become reoccurring, I feel like have not been driven into the ground, where I'm thinking, oh, if I see Penelope again, I'm going to scream. If I see Secret Word again, I'm going to drive my, you know, a pen through my eyes. So I think from versatility, I don't know, charisma, it's close. But I do like the variation on her characters. That said, that's a tough one. I think Kristen Wiig's still going to sort of get the win at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think so as well. I just think that there were points in time where Kristen Wiig like had to basically, that she was treated as like the person who was carrying the show on her back, fair or unfair, and whether or not she should have been given so much. I don't think that we'll ever see Kate McKinnon given as much airtime in an era as Kristen Wiig was.
No, absolutely. And there was that last season, there were episodes where Kristen Wiig was in almost more sketches than the guest host. She was really carrying it. Oh, Rob, I'm so annoyed.
Sorry.
Blue Bear in the chat room just suggested for the live show next 2 weeks, Eddie Murphy in the California.
Oh, that would be hilarious. Oh,
you know what? I actually would say, as much as you guys know how I feel about the Californians, Eddie Murphy in the Californians, I'm back in for that. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mike Bloom. He says, it's been more than a month since we've seen any good neighbor sketches on the live show. Are they going the way of the dodo?
I think that they got problems. They really got problems. I think there's probably, I don't know if they're at a full no confidence. I bet that they're shooting some stuff that's not making it to air, though. I bet there's still Dave McCary there. You know, the guy who's, you know, there specifically to direct is probably they're pushing for stuff. I don't have a good feeling about it.
Okay.
And by the way, Beck Bennett, no knock on Beck Bennett, having a tough year. I mean, there was a point where we thought he was going to surpass Taron Killam as being the go-to straight man, the go-to dad, the go-to boss, had a lot of characters, baby boss, a lot of stuff. Digital shorts having a tough season just as far as amount of airtime, which is a big surprise for me.
All right, let's do one more question and we'll wrap this up. Bill Simmons, again, JK's brother, says Michael Shea flubbed another line on Weekend Update. If you were Lorne, would you think about replacing Shea after the season? By the way, I've noticed he wears the same suit and tie every episode.
And I like that he's got the biggest dress transition. Suit and tie for Weekend Update, and then just like bright red hoodie for the Good Nights. It like he's like a 12-year-old who can't wear that suit any longer. Always makes me laugh. So, you know, I would say no. I think that they're going to be in. I think they're going to keep Che for at least another season. I don't know that I agree with it, to be honest, but I respect it. I think they don't need any more change for a little while. I think they're going to play this out.
Okay. And speaking of play this out.
Oh.
Well, Rich, we are closing in on the 40th anniversary.
So close.
We're so close. I do want to still record a special podcast for the 40th anniversary. And of course, recap the actual 40th anniversary schedule or special. The problem is that live show that night that is on at the same time as The Walking Dead, which is another show that I podcast. So we'll figure out a time along the way to do. We will bring you coverage of the special. We definitely want to hear what Rich and you guys have to say about the 40th anniversary show. Rich, any other final thoughts tonight?
Probably going to be our last SNL, classic SNL episode for a good month. So there's a good one to go out on, but of course, looking forward to celebrating 40 years of comedy.
All right. Of course, thank you so much to Scott St. Pierre working behind the scenes on the show. And thank you, James Keast, for your breakdown of D'Angelo. I'll be putting the DVR of the show on tonight for my wife to test your theory. We'll see. See how it goes.
I'll save it for Valentine's Day. Maybe it'll work on Valentine's Day.
Yes. Oh, boy. Thanks so much to everybody who asked questions during the show. Thank you, Bill Simmons. Thank you, Mike Bloom. Thank you as well to Blue Bear Racing Source, Johnny DeSilvera, even, Rich.
Yeah. And by the way, never thank a shout out to Laura H., who is not with us when we do the live shows, but during the week is often posting a lot of great stuff about SNL. Always appreciated on the timeline and Twitter. Great stuff.
Yeah, the great Laura Holtzwasser. For those of you guys listening to the audio version, stay tuned because Jebediah Rahapkinson is here to tell you what he thinks about the 40th anniversary. And spoiler, he's not impressed, Rich.
He's seen every episode of SNL over 40 years.
I don't want to step on it. I don't want to step on it, but we'll hear what he has to say. We'll be live, or we're not live. We will be with you sometime after the 40th anniversary show to talk about that. Have a great week. Looking forward to hear what you guys have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello again, Rob Tackenberg. Your beloved Zedediah Rahapkinson returns. I knew I had to when I saw my imposter return to Saturday Night Live over the week's end. But I hear that's not the only thing returning to SNL. A 40th anniversary special, how lovely. Well, as I am wont to do, I've prepared my thoughts on every cast member returning to the hallowed halls of 8H, as announced on my Instagram feed. And I think you'll find my assessment to be equitable and scrupulous. Without a doubt, the SNL 40th anniversary special has assembled the worst special guests of all time. Let's start with the five-timers, like Steve Martin, Tom Hanks, and Alec Baldwin. You know why they can come back so much? Because nobody wants them in their movies. I'll tell you what five-timer stands for, being five times more forgettable than Paul Britton. You better believe that's a next. From Weekend Update, Amy Poehler, Tina Fey, and Seth Meyers. Here's an update. You all suck. Next. Mike Myers and Dana Carvey. Wayne and Garth, more like pain and barf. Next. Bill Hader. Stefan. This character has everything. That makes me want to kill myself. Next. David Spade. Just shoot me. Too easy. Next. Drew Barrymore, more like Drew, I can't bear anymore. Paul McCartney, I'm 364 and I still don't love you. Kristen Wiig, why don't you take Ventura over to the 405 and travel back to the last time you were relevant as Dr. Pat on the Joe Schmo Show next. Justin Timberlake and Andy Samberg, step one, cut a hole in a box, two. Put your junk in that box. Three. Hurl yourselves into a dumpster to be taken out like the garbage that you are. Next. Garrett Morris, best known for his role as that guy you had to Google when the reunion cast was announced. Next. Taylor Swift, I knew you were terrible when you walked in. We saw more originality out of Ashley Simpson's hoedown. And of course, there's the overrated Eddie Murphy. I'd rather meet Dave and exchange 1,000 words than see this sorry excuse for a comedian. I'd better not do this next one, considering you were such bitches about the Garrett Morris joke. I'm going to do it! The only good thing about this reunion special is that at least those hacks Gilda Radner and Phil Hartman were invited back. Oh! In conclusion, where's my favorite guest of all time? Sinead O'Connor, she was a delight. Good day, sirs.